Welcome back to Sound the Foghorn, FanSided's official San Francisco Giants podcast. We are back for our 17th episode. I am your host, Mark DeLucchi, and today I am joined by the associate editor for Baseball Prospectus, Ginny Searle. Ginny, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. You know, I was thinking earlier this week, it was just, you know, we're kind of getting to that point where we're getting close to that year mark, right, from when, you know, the pandemic, I think, really hit, impacted people's lives in a very direct way here in the U.S. And so I was talking, you know, a year ago, actually, this week was sort of the last week before spring break. I was a senior in college, and then we were prepping to go break. We go for break, and then, you know, the second week, I think, is when I want to say Rudy Gobert and I think, right, Tom Hanks are kind of the two celebrities that kind of change how people, I think, perceived, you know, what COVID would be. I was just talking with some friends about, man, it's, you know, we're getting to the point now, right, where the pandemic's on our radar now for really more than a year. And, you know, baseball is kind of back now at the place it was before, you know, that happened, right? We're starting spring training, pitchers and catchers have reported, we're set to have sort of some teams having their first inter-squad games, you know, other games are setting up. And man, I can imagine for you, you know, in your position over at Baseball Prospectus, it's been a whirlwind of a year, first like trying to find content, then trying to figure out how to write about baseball during a pandemic. You know, what's kind of that been like for you?
Yeah, it was definitely a weird year. I think it was March 13th was when MLB shut down, but I could be off by a couple days. But in any case, I remember at that point, it felt like it was belated, which MLB is kind of how MLB tends to come to things, belatedly. And yeah, it was definitely a challenge because, you know, once the league shut down, you know, and obviously Craig Goldstein is the real man in charge, but ever since MLB shut down, we had the question of, well, what are we going to do in the interim? How are we going to cover the season if and when it starts? Are we going to, you know, how are we going to cover positive tests of players? And just a lot of questions to answer that I think coming into 2020, we hadn't really considered ever having to answer. So it was a lot, but I think ultimately we ended up getting, one thing is that we ended up getting a season that I feel like people don't feel was farcical, which mm-hmm. I think helped things on multiple levels in terms of how people feel about baseball. You know, whether or not MLB earned positive feelings with, you know, things like Just Turner on the field after, and then the various different things that MLB's managed to step into over the off season, that's worth considering. But I think that people ended up being happy that MLB managed to have a season and that the playoffs, the way they did, didn't end up making anyone feel like the Dodgers weren't worthy champions. So I just think it was good to have, you know, in terms of just the fact that people, if they're subscribing to a baseball site, want to have baseball to talk about. I think that was helpful. But it was certainly a struggle and, you know, I think a learning experience in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, definitely. I can imagine. And I think, too, you know, and, you know, we'll get to the Giants story. I just taking us on this little tangent here. But I do think, want to kind of commend you guys for the work you did, because I think what it also did was in ways that had not, because there was literally were no games being played, like it was even harder kind of for the usual you know, ignoring kind of the surrounding world when we're talking about baseball and, you know, sports in general. I think this happened. And obviously we have, you know, the background or, you know, alongside it, obviously, you know, the election year and the host of other things, a host of other major events, right, that will kind of define 2020. And, you know, BP did a fantastic job, I think, in my opinion. I don't think I'm alone in that, in terms of maneuvering through those things and showing how these things are interconnected, that you really can't talk about baseball without talking about these other things. And that's something that I think, you know, baseball coverage, you know, not dissimilar from sports or really any part, I think, of journalism has historically struggled with or purposely like avoided trying to engage with. And I thought that's been a really cool part. I guess cool might not be the right word, but really engaging part of the work I found over at BP. I guess I should, full disclosure, I've had a few pieces published over there, but the other people's work is primarily what I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for saying all those nice things. I think the credit there all goes to Craig. But I think generally, none of us are really the types over at BP to think that stick to sports is something that has ever made sense. But I think 2020 really showed that it's not something that you can even kind of pretend makes any sense, just because everything's connected, surprisingly, to, I guess, yep. some. And you have to kind of look at things in an overarching manner if you want to have a sense of, you know, what's right, what's the context, and that's all important information. And if you just say stick to sports, you're never going to get that.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So, you know, looking at the Giants team, looking at this Giants roster, you know, you guys over at BP have a projection system called Pacoda, and you know, you have a bunch of essays on each team, and you wrote, you know, the Giants essay. I think it's right. Pacoda likes what the Giants are building right now, I believe, is the headline. I'm curious for you, you know, when you kind of are stepping into, all right, you know, I'm going to write the Giants essay, you know, did your perception of the team change from when you were like, all right, this is the piece I'm going to write, to then when you looked at the projections and looked at the roster and organization and what you went, how your sentiments ended up being towards where the team stands right now?
So the Pacoda series is when we have the seasonal projections come out, which I believe happened earlier this month or near the start of this month. We have what we call Pacoda Week, where people can, you know, pick any, you know, contributors can pick all sorts of topics and write about something that they find interesting in the numbers, you know, just as a way to kind of spread the word of the numbers, what they find interesting, and how they might tell the story of the season in a way that people haven't thought of yet. And a lot of those, there's topics that, you know, just year in, year out, people are going to want to hear about, like, you know, pitchers who are looking like they might break out, or same for hitters, things like that. And the Giants was different just because, as I think I noted, it was, the Giants were one of three teams, with the others being, I believe, the Yankees and Blue Jays, that were projected for, I think it was 11 hitters who were projected for at least a 100 ERC plus. And then, I mean, the night before publication, another one, Lamont Wade Jr., got added via, I think, a minor trade. Yep. And so it's just, you know, that's not something that we were expecting. I don't think that anyone really thinks of the Giants as having one of the league's deepest offense, which is how Pacoda seems to see it. So I just decided to look into that, and I kind of found that it just kind of seems that there's a lot there with this Giants offense, even if it's one of the older ones in the league.
Yeah, and you mentioned what I think is so interesting and what kind of makes it difficult to evaluate is it is kind of a lineup of depth in contrast to, say, star power, right? Like, you don't mention the Dodgers and Padres when you look at that, but obviously you look at the 3, 4, maybe even 5 best hitters on those lineups, and almost all of them, if not most of them, are going to rank above. I think looking at right now, Alex Dickerson is the highest projected DRC plus for the Giants at 122. And you know, what do you think, or I guess, you know, how do you kind of view that in terms of the Giants obviously have this depth that these other teams don't? They also, though, probably don't have, you know, these, you know, they don't have any current generational elite level players. You know, Buster Posey, you know, obviously was at one time, but has far removed from that performance. You know, for the Giants team, is, how do they make up for, I guess, that gap at the top? Like, is depth enough to do that?
Well, funny you mentioned the Dodgers. I just went and looked as you were talking about that. And yeah, they have 5 guys who are projected for at least a 126 DRC plus. Yeah. So, yeah, but so I think that I think that having that kind of top end, the players who, you know, the all world type players like Mookie Betts or Aaron Judge on the Yankees, Mike Trout, players like those, I think that you end up seeing just how much they can pull forward on offense, which, you know, it makes sense if you have someone who puts up a 150 DRC plus, and then you have, you know, that's an average, that with 2 guys hitting league average, and what you have, 117.
Yeah.
So compare that to, you know, the Dodd, that's pretty much the Giants' whole, all of those guys, right? 117 is probably what you, best case scenario, you look at all those starters, I doubt they average out to 117 and in terms of projection. And so I think that just having a really high top end drags up your, it just drags up your floor because of how much damage guys on the top end of the league can do.
And that's where it gets kind of into, and this is kind of, I guess, in the weeds of the projections, but where you get into, you know, potential, I guess, platoon splits and other things. Because I think the Giants, you know, last year we saw, and they really took advantage of that 28-man roster with a lot of, you know, promotions and demotions, really playing aggressive platooning of Alex Dickerson and Darren Ruff in left field at various points, Alex Dickerson and Austin Slater at others, Wilmer Flores and Brandon Belt at first base and DH. But, you know, with two fewer roster spots, without the DH in the National League, that does kind of limit their ability to do that. But I think that's kind of been one way they've said is, you know, we don't necessarily have these elite hitters, but maybe if we get two above average hitters who complement each other, you know, I think you talk about in the essay, you know, Tommy La Stella and Evan Longoria and how they can hopefully play off each other, you know, to kind of maybe get that elite performance out of a position from kind of taking the strengths from two players.
Yeah. And I think that it's interesting how they're doing that at some positions, whereas other positions, they really seem to have kind of laser focused. Obviously at shortstop, no one's going to be unseating Brandon Crawford, but in terms of a backup, it's Mauricio Dubon, right? Mm-hmm. Who is pretty much locked in at center field, unless they're going to give Yastrzemski another try. And so I think that the fact that they're really relying on people at those positions allows them to have players who have less premium defensive skills kind of bounce around at those positions that are a little bit more forgiving. And I think that just the hope is, and I think it seemed to work out pretty well last year, is that you can always have someone starting who's well primed for the matchup. And I think that with the Giants, they, you know, it's not that hard to see it all fall apart, but it came together pretty well last year. And other than everyone being a year older, there's not really any reason to think that there's too much regression looming.
Definitely. And I think another part of that equation too, right, is, you know, Buster Posey obviously, you know, opted out last season, but even if he performs, you know, at the kind of below average offensive levels he was in 2019, you know, that's a huge upgrade because that really became kind of a black hole for their lineup going between, you know, Joey Bart, who's obviously a top prospect, but really struggled, Chadwick Tromp, who had his moments, but still all in all really underperformed. So that also might, you know, buy them a bit of leeway, I guess, you know, in that lineup where if there's regression somewhere else, hopefully that quote unquote upgrade at catcher, you know, can counteract that a bit.
Right. And I mean, it's, you know, it can't be easy to take a year off and then come back to the major league competition after, you know, 18 months of layoff between 2019 and then April of this year. But I think on the other hand, there's, you know, you're never going to get a more rested Buster Posey. He's whatever he's got left in the tank, I think you're going to see this season, because also he's, you know, this is his last chance to get a you know, I'm not sure what he could do as a catcher to get a free agent deal, but in theory, this is his last chance. I mean, how old is he? 34?
Yeah, I think he's 30. Oh, I think 33 on the young end. He'll be 34 in March. He'll be 34 next month.
Okay. So, I mean, that's not that old, but obviously catcher years are a little bit different. But I think that Joey Bart is kind of in the organization, makes it seem as if there's a couple different ways that things could go in the future with the Giants. It seems as if Buster Posey is going to be behind the plate a lot this year, but how much is that the plan in the future? And how much, if Brandon Belt's contract is also expiring, I kind of, you know, you wonder what you're going to see there. But in any case, yeah, I think having his bat back in the lineup is going to be something that's, you know, great for fans and great for, hopefully, for their lineup, because, you know, even if he is just more of a league average bat than a really all-star level bat now, that's, you know, for a catcher, that's still something.
Definitely. And, you know, you mentioned the center field and shortstop is two spots where, you know, like you mentioned, Brandon Crawford and Mauricio Dubon kind of are not only entrenched, there aren't obvious, you know, alternatives that are slated to make, you know, know, the roster. You mentioned that they tried Yastrzemski in center last year. He struggled with it, had even his struggles in right field. They seem high on Lamont Wade, which is interesting defensively. I think he's going to start in center field, actually, in their first spring training game. So I think that's interesting because, you know, Pakota was one of the projection systems that's relatively high on Wade, projecting him to be an above average hitter or about league average hitter, I think, from TRC Plus. Anyway, offensively, but obviously historically he's been limited to the corner. If he can play center and, you know, as a left-handed bat to counter Dubon, who's, you know, a right-handed hitter who's done well against lefties, I think that's a place where the Giants are hoping they can have kind of those two young guys under team control to be that platoon that can, you know, maybe take a step forward this season.
Yeah, and I think what they do with Wade should be kind of telling of how they see, I think, a couple different people, because if Yastrzemski's not in center at all, I think that question kind of answers itself, because if I'm remembering correctly, he pretty much didn't have an inning there past the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But also Mauricio Dubon pretty much played every single inning there from, I think, basically the beginning of September onwards. So to what degree is them just really wanting to see a chance for Dubon? And what does it mean for Yastrzemski and Dubon if either of them are entrenched? Because, you know, the thing with Dubon is he really can bounce around, but if he can play center field really well, that's valuable in itself. But if he can play shortstop, that's valuable too. Mm-hmm. But that's not something you're going to see a ton of with Crawford, unless something happens there. But I think in general, you're going to continue to see the Giants kind of trying to test things out as much as they're able to.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it is so interesting because, you know, this lineup, like you said, it's deep. It has, you know, a lot of players that, you know, you can see being contributors on a contending team, but it lacks that kind of top end talent. But there's also the element of Posey, Crawford are both, and Belt are all free agents at the end of the season. And so you're also trying to figure out, all right, what is the Giants, you know, are the Giants thinking of exit strategies, kind of trying to, you know, were they giving Dubon center field last year to see if that was an option to now maybe reintegrate him at shortstop more to, you know, be Brandon Crawford's heir apparent, or do they see him as a long-term fit in center field? I think Wade is also interesting because of another former Twins outfielder who the Giants acquired in a trade, Jalen Davis, who I think is similarly projected by Pakota. You know, he was someone who fans expected to see a good amount of last year, ended up not. He spent most of it at the alternate site. But could he factor, you know, he could factor in to that outfield equation. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how do the Giants balance these younger players with these established veterans, and do any of these established veterans have avenues to play themselves into new contracts with the team? Like, has the front office already decided that they're going to move on from Crawford, from Belt, from Posey for younger options, or are they giving these players a chance to essentially prove themselves to give them extensions down the line? I think all of that is up in the air right now because we really haven't seen this front office have to make, you know, those decisions outside of Madison Bumgarner, when obviously he left at free agency. And he was even a different case because he was still younger than what Crawford and Belt and Posey will be.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe in terms of commitments, it's just past 2021, it's just mm-hmm. Evan Longoria for one more year, and then now the Tommy La Stella contract, which I believe has 3 years. So, I mean, it's pretty bare in terms of, and then Cueto's also coming off the books after this year on the rotational end, right? That's right,
yeah.
So a lot of money coming off this year, and, you know, it doesn't seem like the next wave of prospects, as that system is finally improving, is like right on the horizon, but neither does it seem that the team is centered around any four of those players. So, you know, it seems likely that maybe one of the four comes back, but you have to assume that not all of them are going to be returning. And I think that what it seems as if what the organization is doing is kind of setting itself up to be prepared for all of those eventualities. You know, they've got, you know, first base is less of a concern because guys like Slater, and, you know, you can probably slide a lot of guys over to first base, but at shortstop, you have the Dubon option. You have, although again, that means that you have to figure out a center fielder, but as you pointed out, maybe that's what they're doing, kind of trying to groom other center fielders so that they can have numerous options up the middle. And last season they kind of already proved that they can do it without Posey, and you would hope that with Joey Bart that's only going to improve. You know, not to say that the Giants wouldn't and their fans wouldn't love to continue having Posey around, but you know, Belt obviously brought a lot last year, but I'm not certain that anyone's really expecting him to repeat on that level where he was basically an MVP contender.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Cueto, I think you're happy to get probably a mid-rotation kind of showing. You'd be pretty happy with. And then Crawford as well. He's a good shortstop, but I guess my overall point is that the Giants haven't really been built around these players as pillars of production for years.
Yep.
And I think that sets them up well with money coming off the books, such that even if they do retain a couple of these players, you assume that the cost is going to be significantly lesser, because off the top of my head, I'm guessing it's something like $80 million owed to all of those players combined. And even if you do end up getting a couple of them back, or even if you got all of them back at half the overall cost, that's a lot of new money that you can allocate elsewhere if you would, you know, if the Giants feel there at that point.
You know, it's really interesting to me. And again, it's not just as a fan and someone who's followed the team for so long, but in contrast to the Dodgers and Padres, who are in the place they are in, which kind of complicates it also. And again, where if the Giants, like, you know, we all kind of mention it, and we'll get to the pitching portion of this shortly, is, you know, if they aren't in that playoff contention, and maybe Brandon Belt does surprise us, because I agree, I think most of us would say we expect Belt to probably be, you know, above average, you know, about what he was prior to last season. But if he does have that, you know, MVP caliber of performance in the first half of the season, the Giants are out of playoff contention. He's slated for free agency. Does he become someone, you know, they dangle a trade? Again, he's a rental. He's a position player. Those type of players haven't tended to garner much prospects in return in recent deadlines. But it's, again, because it's a relatively new front office, even though this will be Farhan Zaidi's third year, it's ultimately, you know, not a huge sample to get kind of what his tendencies are with these decisions as well. So it's just, there's so many paths this can go, again, from just looking at the veterans, just looking at the young guys, and just looking at the rest of the division. But you mentioned Cueto, and, you know, really that brings me to kind of a broader question about this starting rotation. If the hitting side is depth, the starting rotation side is definitely not. It has a lot of, I guess it does have a number of arms, but, you know, if you look at projection systems, they are not as high on those starters, whether we're looking at Cueto, Alex Wood, Aaron Sanchez, Anthony DeSclafani, Logan Webb, you know, probably the exception being Kevin Gausman, who after last season seems to be projected to do quite well. But what do you make of their approach to the starting rotation this season?
Well, I follow the Angels pretty closely. They're the team that I grew up watching, and I'm not sure I'd say I'm a fan now, because I find them so incredibly frustrating. And the reason I bring that up is because I think that this approach is one that I'm surprised the Angels did not employ. I mean, I suppose they ended up kind of having a similar solution of bringing on arms that they're hoping to have some sort of resurgence or unlocking in. But I think I would rather have the slate that the Giants picked up, even if they're all on similar one-year commitments, than the ones the Angels did, which, given the Angels are nominally contending, I think speaks either poorly of them or well of the Giants, or potentially both. I think, you know, Desclafani is, am I saying that right?
I think so. I think that's it. I'm Italian. That sounds like an Italian name. I feel like I should know, but I'm not, yeah, but yeah, I think Desclafani, something to that effect.
Okay. Well, I did my best. well, he, you know, I think he and Webb both have a decent chance at coming back well, and, you know, it's kind of hard to bring together what performances, who performed how in 2020, but I think Alex Wood also struggled, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And and then Aaron Sanchez, I don't think he pitched at all last year, and he's the new signing. He just came on this week, correct?
Yes, yeah, this week or last week, 1 year, $4 million.
So are they doing the Giants doing a six man? Have they officially said, or is
So
that the expectation?
that's been the weird thing, because I've seen people float the six-man rotation, and it doesn't seem like something they would lean towards because they've seemed pretty insistent that they want a big bullpen. That's what they did last year. And so it seems like the way things are tracking, unless he has a really good spring, that it'll actually be Logan Webb's going to start at AAA in the Sacramento rotation. At least that's kind of my read on things, where things stand. Because, like you mentioned, there are kind of six arms who, you could slate in, but I think it's going to be they're going to sort of kick the can down the road, let Logan Webb start the season in Sacramento, figuring that, given their injury histories and recent struggles, that probably one of DeSclafani, Sanchez would, or whoever will either, have to miss some time with injury or just struggle enough. And then I think Webb will get another shot at the rotation.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me to see the Giants have a kind of a quick trigger finger here in terms of getting rid of someone who maybe comes out of the gate with low velocity or something like that. Although you do wonder how, the short year might change that as well, because what if a lot of guys come out of the gate with low velocity? But still, I think if something very anomalous happens, like how kind of Atlanta jettisoned Fulchanovich really quickly into last season, if I'm remembering that
Yeah,
situation correctly.
that's a good point.
And I it wouldn't surprise me to see something like that, because none of these are substantial commitments. I think DeSclafani might have gotten like 6 million, if my memory serves me correctly, and that, obviously is not much in the grand scheme of pitcher contracts. And but yeah, on maybe the six man, I'm wondering if maybe it seems less likely, because I do know Aaron Sanchez had an incentive that escalated based off how many starts he completed. So you kind of wonder if there's a six man whether he signs that. But
Yeah, that's a good point.
in any case, I have to imagine that means he's locked down, and then obviously Cueto and Gausman are locked down. So I guess DeSclafani, and then last it would just be Wood, Weber, Beed, any of those.
Yeah, and the thing about Wood is he, because that's kind of a similar situation, and he was a his in, contract doesn't have a starts incentive, but it does have an incentive based on like 25 or 20 appearances where you get like nine or more outs or something to that effect, which, I guess you could read into that for a long reliever role. It seems like they're going to let him start though, and it seems like that's more flexibility from the player side they wanted in case the Giants try to use openers in various outings. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it, because Sanchez is coming off shoulder surgery. That's right, I forgot about Tyler Beede. Like you mentioned, he's coming off Tommy John. He's not going to be ready for opening day, but by May and definitely by June, he should be tracking to come back to the rotation. So again, it's different than the hitting side, because most of those hitters who are kind of projecting to be league average, above average, where I'd say the pitching side, it seems like there's a lot of options who project probably to be below average to average, with I think Gausman the lone exception to that. But it is kind of, I guess, a similar approach in terms of just accumulate arms. Hopefully you hope your young guys develop alongside it and that you can kind of piece this together.
Yeah, and I think that it might just be a reflection of the fact that teams are, if you think you have a premium talented pitcher, you're not gonna potentially leave them on the market, like, how Randy Arozarena, even though he has all that talent, kind of got never had that chance. If you have that pitcher that you think has, you can just throw him in the bullpen and you can figure it out. And so I think that it ends up shaking out that you often see this, that you can get a pitcher who, and obviously a lot of pitchers, develop themselves, and, Tampa Bay, for instance, and end up improving. But I think generally, a lot of the pitchers that you can find on the market, you're hoping have more that league average upside rather than something better than that, as the Giants have found over and over on the hitting side.
Yeah, and to their credit, it's interesting to for you to compare to the Angels, because I hadn't really thought of this, but in some sense, this is a similar approach to what the Angels have kind of done in the past. Not talking about necessarily this year, although in some sense this year as well, where they've kind of been criticized, for kind of targeting these, I guess, secondary options, arms with injury histories or various question marks that they could get kind of on lower size, lower commitment deals. And they, that's blown up for them. I mean, the Angels have had struggles there on the rotation. But to be fair to the Giants, last season, you could have said similar things heading into the year. You know, Gausman was coming off the year where he was removed, you know, from the rotation, finished it in the bullpen. Drew Smyly was coming off injuries. And, you know, Gausman had a really good season, accepts the qualifying offer. He's back on a one-year deal. And, you know, Smyly, even though he starts the year on the injured list, has an exceptional year and gets, I believe, $11 million from Atlanta this offseason. And so it does seem like at least last year they had success with, you know, kind of these bounce back starters, and they're going to need that this season to, you know, really get through the inning, get through the season, get through the innings, because that's the one thing you look at it. It had success in a 60 game season, but you know, it's even riskier because if this blows up early and you have 130 games left and already two of your starters are either struggling so much or have injuries, you know, it does feel like a really risky way of going about it though.
Yeah. And I think that it shows that the Giants do have in Farhan Zaidi in their front office, they have a talent in selecting players that have that upside and have a chance of delivering on it. And, you know, I think that that just speaks really well of how their rebuild's going. And I mean, also the fact that they haven't bottomed out like other teams. I think, you know, whether the contracts that they had when the Zaidi regime took over allowed them to jettison, you know, whether they could have traded them off in the same way other teams have is, I suppose, debatable. But, you know, they've still put, other than maybe one year that they had like 60 wins, they've mostly put competent squads on the field, even as they kind of age and regress, and that now they're having the ability to find young players and develop them. I mean, you know, it always used to be the idea that if the, you know, it still is with the Rays, but if the Astros were calling and if the Rays are calling you for a player, it was like, well, why don't you just shut up and figure out what's up with that player? Like, instead of letting this team take that player and improve them. And if that's what's going to happen with the Giants, that kind of, I think, would speak well to their ability to do what it seems like they're trying to do, which is kind of just become the Dodgers of Northern California.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's where, you know, we talked about that money coming off the books at the end of this season. And when we think about, you know, this upcoming free agent class that includes, you know, well, for now, Francisco Lindor and Carlos Correa and Corey Seager, excuse me, and a number of other premium players, it seems like at least that the Giants are well set to get involved in those bidding wars for more than even, you know, two, maybe even three of the bigger names on that market. And so that's where, again, it's just really interesting because, like you mentioned, the Giants have set themselves up. It seems very clear that what they've done is they've given themselves as much flexibility as they can. They've acquired this upper minor league depth through minor moves for, you know, a Mike Yastrzemski that's worked out really well. You know, they're trying to do it again with a Lamont Wade, a Jalen Davis, all these other things, while adding supplemental pieces like Wilmer Flores and, you know, Alex Woods and Gausman's, while their prospects at the lower level of the farm system, you know, guys like Joey Bart, guys like Marco Luciano, Luis Matos, have moved up the minor league ranks before 2020. And then obviously in 2020, a number had strong instructs, but it makes it really hard to project where they're going because, you know, they have the prospect depth to trade from it. If they had wanted to target a Blake Snell or a Yu Darvish, you know, but they also have the big league depth to trade from that and then, you know, get more prospects. So it's kind of frustrating in a sense to guess where it's going to go, but it is also a really interesting puzzle to look at because they have given themselves all these different options.
Yeah, I think that it seems a little bit unclear, and I imagine it would be frustrating for a fan in a sense to not, I don't necessarily look at the Giants as an organization and know when they're best built to go for it. Obviously next year they're going to start having the financial flexibility everyone's so fond of, but in terms of when they're actually best suited to try to make a run at more championships is, I think, more up in the air. But yeah. I think the converse of that is there is also a sense that they could pretty much do it at any point, which is much, much more than you can say of most franchises. So, you know, I think you do have to be pleased, or at least I would be pleased with how things have been progressing, but whether it's going to be next year or the year prior, the year after, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, no, that's, And again, that's where the division plays a role in it. You know, the Dodgers and Padres are there. Like, you know, where do the Giants stack up, you know, in the NL Central or AL Central, I think is a legitimate question to ponder, because, you know, I don't think they're going to get picked over the Cardinals. But I think you look at a Cubs team, and like that, you know, you look at that division, you know, with Pittsburgh and all that, the Giants, you know, in that division might have a puncher's chance. That is just, again, it's hard to know, like you said about that window, in part because it's not that they just have to, you know, build an 85-90 win team. It's that if the Padres and Dodgers are able to maintain their recent success, they need to build a juggernaut to get to the top of their own division.
Right. It seems like the Padres are also intent on becoming the Dodgers, or at the very least are planning on being this good for 14 years or so. And I think it makes it all the more harder, because, as you point out, just because the NL Central has, you know, there are three teams in the, no, sorry, four teams in the NL Central that have more projected wins than the Giants. But does that mean that they're all better than the Giants? I kind of doubt it. It's just that when you have a 104 win projected team, which, God, 104 wins as a projection is just
wild.
Yeah. So, I mean, and 104 wins in a division with the Padres is who have 95. It's I don't envy Farhan Zaidi's task. I mean, at the very least, you have the Rockies, and they're never going to be good.
That might be true. The way they're going right now, that does not seem like they're heading in really any direction. I mean, obviously, in terms of wins and losses, down. But I mean, in terms of, again, that's one thing for Giants fans, as frustrated as you may be, is like you've mentioned, you know, I do think that's a really good point about they kind of have, you know, the trigger at their disposal to pull whenever they want to, if they're willing to cash in some of these prospects for big league talent, if they're willing to spend on the free agent market. They have that, they can kind of do pretty much from any point forward. Where you look at a team like Colorado, you know, you look at teams, you know, like Pittsburgh or Detroit, where they may have, you know, in some of those cases, they've gone the full rebuild route. They know what they're trying to do, but the path forward is a lot more cumbersome, and they have a lot more flexibility in the way they do it. The Giants, obviously, every team is better off if their prospects hit it and become stars, but the Giants have some flexibility where, even if they don't necessarily get a generational piece out of their farm system, if they just get a number of starters, they have the flexibility to probably be able to add the best players they can through free agency or through trade as well. That's not an option for someone like, say, you know, Detroit or Pittsburgh or someone to that ilk.
Yeah, and I think also that, I mean, they have money as well, which obviously helps. And the fact that, I mean, so little commitment, it's just really Evan Longoria, but when it's one player in 1 year, as it will be after this year, that's just not that much to worry about. And
yeah, and it's only like $17 or $18 million too. So even in the context of baseball, it's not even a huge contract.
Right, and it's not as if Longoria is not a still a useful player. If he is, as he kind of seems, a bat who's mostly good against left-handed pitching, I think it kind of depends on how the Giants want to utilize him going forward. But you have to imagine this year, at the very least, he gets mostly a full slate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's going to be incredibly interesting. Ginny, thank you for coming on today. Where can the people follow you on social media, find your work? Keep in touch with what you're doing.
I'm on Twitter at Ginny Searle. I don't use it too much, but I keep telling myself I'll get back to it, but maybe for the best not to.
Yeah, I was gonna say, no. as someone attached to it to a problematic level, I think you have the right approach.
All right, well, I'll keep that in mind. You can also read my work at very often at Baseball Prospectus, where I write up transaction analysis, other articles, and, you know, really whatever. And yeah, you should definitely subscribe to Baseball Prospectus if you are interested. And
Okay, well, I second all of those points. Ginny, thank you for taking the time to talk to me on this Saturday. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
So this has been the 17th episode of Sound the Foghorn. As always, I am your host, Mark DeLucchi. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt DeLucchi. That is MaddeLucchi. You can also stay up to date on all your Giants news and rumors at Around the Foghorn. You can follow us on social media, at pretty much on any social media platform at Round the Foghorn. And I'm very excited that starting on March 1st, this coming week, is going to be Giants Prospect Week. So we're rolling out a trove of Giants prospect content, including essays on recent trends from the draft, the top which will culminate in the top 31 Giants prospect rankings coming out on Friday. I'll be doing a Q&A with fans as well. So if you go online to the website or social media, you can ask a question there and make sure to go in and submit on that. But otherwise, thank you again for joining us. And until next time, have a good one and stay safe.